Yeah, it's moving slowly like they do, but it's headed toward Dream Spring. Kimmelin and Ned are keeping an eye on it. I closed my eyes. A bomb of that size could take out the whole island, maybe more. Such an impact would have been big enough to cave in the caverns below the surface of Detritus. I didn't want to see what it would do to the Kitson city, how far the devastation would reach. We'd have to be very careful taking that down. When I opened my eyes again, several of the Kitson Cytonics had disappeared, and the others were moving toward the exit. Juno had landed his platform and was powering up some of the floating disks that would let them reach the top library shelves, and the Kitson Cytonics were boarding them. They were going to help, but if we let a bomb hit the city, that wouldn't be enough to stop it. I turned to the medtechs and Kuna. "Stay here," I said. "Get Cobb on the radio the minute he's awake." "Yes, sir," Kellen Winnow said. They didn't tell me again that he needed more rest. We all needed a lot of things we weren't getting tonight. Survival took priority. Juno climbed back onto his platform and hovered up to my shoulder. "You could stay here," I said. "It would be safer."
"You are the restorer of lost souls," Juno said solemnly. "He who hearkens unto silent voices, opener of locked doors. Where you go, I will go, Shadow Walker." He still had his platform piled high with books, and I wanted to tell him I didn't think those would be helpful to bring, but they'd done all right for us so far. "Okay," I said, "let's go." I put a hand on Juno's platform and asked Snuggles to take us to my ship on the beach. I wanted to get a better picture of what was happening. We appeared next to the wreckage of my starship, and I tried not to focus on the body that must still be lying on the sand somewhere behind me. Several Kitson ships flew down the beach, fleeing the city. None of them looked like fighters, and one was nothing more than a water tank bolted to a floating pedestal. It didn't move as fast as the others, but it was carrying five Kitson all packed together inside. If the bomb hit, I hoped they could get far enough away, but I wasn't sure there was any place far enough, not on this island. The sky above the city was full of ships, Superiority, Human, Erdale, and Kitson. I could feel some of the Kitson Cytonics, those who could hyperjump, already moving around in the gunships above, and one shot forth a flurry of mind blades, cutting an enemy fighter to pieces. Another disappeared and then reappeared on the other side of the battlefield, catching an enemy ship with its shield down in a barrage of destructor fire. The wreckage fell from the sky. This was good. The contributions of the Kitson Cytonics would give my flight some time to deal with the Lifebuster without losing ground to the Superiority. I wanted to return to Detritus for a ship, but every second counted. I leaned against the damaged fuselage as I reached out to Arturo again. "How far out is that ship?" "Too close," Arturo said. "Hard to say without command to run numbers, but if we bring it down, I can't guarantee it won't destroy the city." It must not have reached optimal placement yet, because they were still bringing it closer before detonating. I had no idea how much time we had, but if we couldn't shoot the ship down without the risk of destroying Dream Spring, we had better work fast. "Have Netter engage his IMP," I told him. "Then Quirk can shoot the ship down, and someone can grab the bomb with a light lance. The safest place to take it will be out of the atmosphere." Spensa had managed to carry one off once and survive, but it was dangerous. If the bomb was on a timer and that person didn't get out before it exploded, they'd be gone. Arturo didn't like that idea. He knew that was what had to be done. He was just terrified to do it. "I'll take the bomb," he said. "No," I told him. "You're in command. You have to give it to someone else." "The hell I do," Arturo said. "If someone needs to risk their life like that, I'll do it." "No," I told him. "You won't. That's an order." Arturo cussed me out, and I understood. It was terrible telling your friends they had to be the ones to do it. Any of them would, though, in a heartbeat. "Have Alanique carry the bomb," I said. "She doesn't have to use a hyperdrive to get out. Might save her the half second of communication time." Scud. Arturo hated that even more. He was attached to Alanique.
Nothing was going on between them yet, but he hoped for it. "I'm sorry," I told him. Spensa didn't need me to order her to get into trouble, but it hadn't been easy flying with her, knowing I might be the one to give her the order that got her killed. "I get it."
"I know you do," Arturo said. "I'll take care of it."
I pulled back, away from Arturo's fear and pain. I tuned my handheld radio to our general channel. I wanted everyone to hear this next part, and that was the fastest way to talk to all of them at once. "Kauri," I said, "do you copy?"
"Copy, jerkface," Kauri said. "We've called in as many ships as we can. We have more, but they aren't fighters."
If we sent civilian ships, we'd be needlessly throwing away lives. "Are you in contact with your Senate?"
"I am," she said. "They have taken shelter, but they have encouraged us to defend the planet. They fear if we surrender, the superiority will destroy us anyway."
The ivory moonlight glinted off the shards of the canopy on my broken ship. "That's exactly what will happen," I said. "I want you to extend them an offer of evacuation. We can grant your leaders safe harbor. Detritus has a shield. It's protected. We could get your Senate out, their families, your family. Maybe some civilians from Dreamspring. We will continue to fight here, but I don't know if we'll be able to save the city. And at least this way, your government will survive. Some of your people will make it out." We could fit a lot of kids in on a human transport ship. We had the one we'd brought to carry Cobb and Gran Gran. I could go get another or send someone else to get one. With a hyperdrive, we might be able to get some of the Kitson out before the lifebuster arrived.
"I will send word to the Senate of your offer," Kauri said. "Thank you for your generosity."
I believed her gratitude was genuine, but her voice sounded frightened. I didn't blame her. "Tell them to hurry," I said. "I'll have a transport ship meet them at the Senate meeting hall."
"Thank you,"
Kauri said. I looked up at the sky again. Wreckage smashed against the cliff, maybe half a click from me. I thought it was Erdale, but I couldn't be sure. "Jerkface," Arturo said, "what can we do to support the evacuation?" "I want FM and Sentry to land and orchestrate the evacuation effort," I said. "Can you spare them?"
"Yes,"
Arturo said. "Good. FM, Sentry, get as many Kitson leaders on board the medical transport ship as you can. Alanique or I will jump them out as soon as the ship is full. We're going to need plenty of cover over Dreamspring while we evacuate. Everyone you can spare."
"I'll tell them," Arturo said.
"Are we planning to pull back?" FM asked. "No," I said. "But if that bomb hits the island, I want to have saved as many people as possible."
"Copy, jerkface," FM said. "We're on it."
I saw FM's and Sadie's ships soaring down out of the sky above the city to land near the Senate building. If anyone would do their best to save literally everyone they could, it was FM. I reached out. "Alanique," I said. "Status?"
"We're coming up on the bomb," she said. "Shield is down. Kimmelin, she hit the ship."
Alanique dropped off, probably swooping in with her light hook, and I reached out to the mines around her, finding Arturo. Scud, his whole mind was lit up with fear. I watched through his eyes as Alanique caught the lifebuster with her light hook and disappeared, taking it up into the vacuum.
"She's got it," Arturo said.
He was wound tight, and I almost asked Juno to read him a meditation. It wouldn't help, not in a situation like this. I could feel the others, I realized. Kimmelin, Ned, T-Stall, Catnip, all of us holding our breath. They wouldn't relax until... I felt Alanique emerge on the other side of the battlefield. "She's back," I said. The lifebuster flashed across the sky with its three distinct explosions. I felt profound relief, not only from Arturo, but from all of us. We could do this now. We should still load that ship for evac, just in case, but without that bomb... Oh, scud. I watched in horror as the superiority ships began to scatter, spreading out away from the island. There were more carrier ships in the sky now, belching forth more fighters, but they were all fanning out, moving away from Dreamspring. What the hell were they doing?
They're spreading us thin, Arturo said. They know they don't have to defeat us to win. We're protecting Dreamspring, so they're going to take their vengeance elsewhere.
It would work, too. They outnumbered us. If we split up, we lost our position. If the battle spread everywhere, they could circle around and fire on Dreamspring while we were out trying to protect the other cities. There weren't enough of us. The damage would be immeasurable. The Superiority didn't care who they hurt, as long as they got what they wanted. We'd escaped them too many times. Now they were going to teach us a lesson. And the Kitsen were going to pay the price. Chapter 19. Arturo had our flights concentrated over Dreamspring, focusing on the ships that remained here, but it wouldn't help the Kitsen on the surrounding islands. Some of the Kitsen Cytonics had hyperjumped their ships after the enemy. I saw one with mind blades trying to take down a ship, another using what felt like concussion bolts to stun a flight of enemy starfighters. They were fighting valiantly, but there were so many of the enemy, and maybe more yet to arrive. We weren't going to be able to save everyone. I looked up at the sky, at the relatively fewer number of ships. This wasn't a good thing. The Superiority would destroy the outer islands and then return for Dreamspring when they were done. I couldn't stop it. The words of Juno's mantra came into my mind again, although the Kitsen was silent beside me. In order to achieve control, you must first accept that you have none. I wanted control, though. I wanted to put a stop to everything terrible that was happening, to save my people, to rescue Spensa, to pull her out of the nowhere and have her with me again safe. I wanted to go back and save my parents. They'd died because they'd made a desperate gambit in hopes that they could control our fate, make a better world for me, for all of us. They failed. They couldn't control it. And neither could I. I closed my eyes. In my mind, the Superiority ship exploded over and over. Do better than we did. We weren't, though, were we? We were trying, but failing all the same. Boom, Boomslug said. Boom, I answered him. A wave of helplessness washed over me. I couldn't stop what was coming. It would be like trying to stop a wave in the ocean. I couldn't stop it, but I could let it wash over me, and I could remain standing after it passed. My radio flashed, Arturo's private channel. Amphi, I said. Jerkface, what are we going to do? We needed more help, but at this point I wasn't sure what else we could do. Against any other enemy, it made sense for us to withdraw, to hope that they would have mercy on the Kitsen, but I was never going to count on the Superiority's mercy. Protect the city, I said. Send Quirk and Netter to Detritus for more transport ships. Ask Angel if she can bring in any Erdale transport ships to evacuate other cities. We need to get as many people as we can off this planet before the Superiority musters up another one of those planetary weapons. Copy, Arturo said. He sounded as hollow as I felt. We both knew what we were about to watch. It would be the worst atrocity either of us had ever seen. The general channel flashed. Jerkface, FM said. The Kitsen are boarding the transport ship. Should we send them out? Is the ship full? I asked. It will be soon, but we can see the closest island, off to the Dawnward side. She'd picked up that term from Alanik, and it was helpful. I had to give the Erdale that. The ships are firing on the island. Shouldn't we help them? There was pain in her voice, not unlike Kaori's. FM had a gift for that, feeling what other people were feeling. Today, it might as well be a curse, but at least I'd been able to give her the job of saving the people we could. Take the ship out, I said. I'm going to check on Rig. We'll try to save them, but I don't. It's okay, FM said. I know you're doing your best. That was what I was afraid of. that this was my best. And it was never, ever good enough. Juno, I said, I'm going to take you to safety. Juno looked down at his platform, at the piles of books stacked at his feet.
I should have brought more, he said. The books are digitized. The knowledge will not be lost, but these are the originals. It is a tragedy to lose them, but that's even more true of my kinsmen.
My throat closed up. All their knowledge. We needed that, and the superiority would do their best to destroy it. Stars. In my mind, I reached for Detritus, searching for Rig. I felt his adrenaline before I'd even found him. He and his team were worn out, trying to get the platform up and running, but they were still there, doing the best they could. Report? I asked him.
We've got lots of slugs in lots of boxes, Rig said, and we think these rooms are connected to several platforms. That's the only reason we can see that you need so many. But Jorgen, we don't even know what some of these systems do.
Alenik's words to me on Redon echoed in my mind. Focus on what you have. If we could get even a few of those platforms here, we might be able to protect more cities while we evacuated them. There were hundreds upon hundreds of Kitson cities. The death toll would still be horrible, but it would be something.
I'm coming, I said. Whatever you've got, we need to try it now.
Okay, Rig said. I looked up at the sky. I could see what FM was talking about now, the flashes of light over the water, the superiority firing on that island. FM should be pulling the transport ship out, but that was one tiny group of Kitson among so many. It was going to take a miracle to get us out of this. Spensa taught me never to count a miracle out, and I hoped that held true even if she wasn't here to work one for us this time.
What are you going to do?
Juno asked. He stood with a book open, resting it on his forearm. In his paw, he held a small stick poised over the page. A pen, I realized. What are you doing? I asked.
I'm making a record, Juno said. An original account of the actions of a shadow walker.
No one's going to want to read about anything I've done, I said. I immediately realized it wasn't true. He might be chronicling the end of civilization on Evershore. That depended not on me, but on how far the superiority wanted to take their vengeance.
I have waited all my life to witness the deeds of a shadow walker, Juno said. And if this day is the last for my home, it will be my honor to record that it was not because your people left us to suffer alone.
Scud. Wouldn't we, though? We could evacuate some Kitson, but if we couldn't turn the battle in our favor, I was going to have to pull my people out. I couldn't let them all die for nothing. Do better than we did, my mother said. I closed my eyes. I didn't know if I could, but I was going to keep trying until I knew the answer. I rested my hand on Juno's platform. Snuggles, I said. Take us to Drape. We appeared in the room with the boxes and a lot fewer roaming slugs, most of which had been corralled into corners by the engineers. Rig spun around from one of the control panels on the walls. Jorgen, he said. FM is fine, I said. She's working on the evacuation effort. But the superiority is fanning out over the planet, bombing civilians. I didn't know how they justified this to themselves. I didn't know how they justified anything, but we had to put a stop to it. We need to get these platforms over there, as many as we can move, as quickly as we can. The hum of all the slugs around us was overwhelming, and it was difficult for me to pick them out one from another. I tried to focus on the hyperdrive slugs, but I couldn't because there were so many. I didn't want to give a blanket instruction to all of them, since we didn't know what many of them could do. Where's Fine? I asked.
Hypercom box, I hope, Rig said. He moved down the row of boxes. Over here.
I found Fine before he did, one of the few signatures I knew in this cacophony.
Fine, I said. Can you tell them to take these platforms to Evershore?
I showed him an image of the slugs he knew. Naga, Happy, Chubbs, Whiskers,
all flying around the planet, and then some of the platforms appearing in a ring beneath the clouds where they could fire on enemy ships.
Go?
Fine said to me. Go, I responded. He hesitated for a moment, conversing, I thought, with the other slugs. And then I felt us slip into the nowhere, the surface of it rippling around us like rings on a pond. We passed beneath the eyes. Scud, this was working. We'd be able to support the flights and at least reduce the damage the ships were able to do to the islands of Evershore. As we reemerged, I looked out the control room window, expecting to see the stars above. Instead, I saw the planet itself, an enormous ball of water, punctuated by sand-colored islands. Scud, the platform was way too high up, and we were facing the opposite of the direction I'd expected. I could see the backside of several of the superiority carrier ships. They might be in range of our hyperweapons, but... One of the engineers swore.
Flight leader, wait, she said. You're going to want to see this.
She indicated the proximity monitors, which showed the planet of Detritus and all the platforms moving around us, the entire belt of them. They were still there. Scud! The control room had worked, but it hadn't only moved some platforms. It had moved the whole damn planet.
Go!
I heard Fine say through the nowhere. And all around me, the nowhere began to ripple, tear, and explode. Chapter 20. Bits of the nowhere ripped apart, exploding outward toward nearby superiority carrier ships. Scud, there were more of them. It was kind of gratifying, seeing how much force Winzik felt he had to bring in order to take us down. But he hadn't done it yet. Hyperweapons I didn't know we had erupted from the surfaces of the platforms, ripping up enemy ships. Ships swarmed below us, mostly centered over the island of Dreamspring. They weren't much more than dots, but through the nowhere I could feel the minds of the pilots, Erdale, Kitson, and human alike, all fighting together. We were pretty high up, maybe even out of the atmosphere, so many of the enemy ships were out of range. I didn't feel like we should move the whole planet on a whim, though, Scud, did we need to move it farther away? What were two planets this large going to do to each other?
Jorgen, Alanique said, what did you—
We brought company, I told her, all of it.
Apparently, she answered.
My view of the planet below began to shift, and I realized the platform was drifting away from Detritus. Rig, I said, are we moving?
Oh, Scud, Rig said. Is that what that navigation system does?
Rig called to the other engineers, and several of them joined him at the panel.
Here, he said. These are navigation controls like the ones on Platform Prime, but because there are no engine systems, I could never figure out what they're for. But now, I think these inputs here are for coordinates, and then the system tells the hyperslugs where to go.
Jerkface, Kauri said over the radio. I don't know what's going on up there, but our tidal authority would like you to know that your planet is going to pull on our oceans, gathering all the water on that side, causing an even worse wave to engulf our islands. Wait. Oh, they say it will do that if one of our planets doesn't rip the other one apart first.
They're right, Rig said. But it should have happened already.
He scanned the monitors, looking for something. I don't know why it hasn't, but my best guess is that the planet itself has some kind of gravitational capacitor, almost as if it was intended to be a traveling space station, so it has systems to counteract the gravitational forces for the surrounding bodies.
The planet, I said, has grav caps?
Yeah, Rig said, shaking his head. Apparently it does.
Negative, Kauri, I said over the radio. Detritus has systems to prevent damage to Evershore.
If so, they aren't working perfectly, Kauri said. The tidal authority is seeing a rise in the water, though not nearly as bad as they'd expect.
We're too close, Rig said. Grav caps have limits, and running them at this strength has to be depleting their power source quickly. We need to move the planet farther off.
Let's do it, I said. Before that, though, can you send the platforms out to the Kitson Islands to defend them?
I need to find the coordinates, Rig said, tapping at his console, using the platform sensors to pinpoint the coordinates of the various islands.
Kauri, I said, does your tidal authority know how far out Detritus needs to be to keep you safe?
They're working up some coordinates now, Kauri said.
Okay, Rig said. Here goes.
The platforms around us began to move. This one jumping to that island, that one to another, the hyperweapons firing on the superiority ships caught in the air above the islands. We hadn't sent our forces out that far, so they wouldn't be caught in the blasts.
We can't move all of them, I said. We don't want to leave Detritus exposed. But let's unload as many as we can, and then I'm going to instruct the slugs to move the planet again.
This is Commander Ulan, a voice said over the platform radio. What the scud is going on up there?
Oh, stars. I couldn't explain this. Not now.
Defense protocol to protect the Kitson planet, sir, I said. I'll give you a full briefing when the sequence is complete.
You're calling this a protocol, Ulan said.
I was stretching the definition of the word, that was for sure.
Rig reached over and turned down the volume on the radio.
Garrig, help me enter these, he said, and one of the other engineers stepped up beside him, assisting Rig in getting more coordinates into the system.
Jerkface, Kauri said. The tidal authority says the water levels are still rising. Even if you move the planet, this is going to cause a tidal wave to hit Dream Spring. They've put out a warning to the city for everyone to get to high ground. The other nearby islands are doing the same.
Moving everyone to high ground would make them easy targets for the superiority. But if they were to drown anyway, what choice did they have?
I'll send my people on the ground to help, I said to Kauri, and then I switched to the MedTech's channel. Kuna, Zing, I said. There's a tidal wave coming. Go into the city and help the Kitson get to high ground.
Copy, Jerkface, Zing said. I turned to Juno. Will the cliffs be high enough to protect the library?
It has stood for centuries, Juno said, and we have faced tsunamis before.
This one might be bigger. It depended on forces I didn't fully understand. Kel and Winnow, I said over the radio, keep an eye on the water. If it looks like you'll be overwhelmed, we'll get you all out with a hyperdrive.
Copy, Zing said again.
I'm working on it, I said. Make sure your people are still headed for high ground. I turned to Rig. We need to move fast so that wave doesn't get worse.
We've got platforms moving toward the islands that are under attack. Shields still operational. Ready when you are.
I reached out to Fine, expressing our need for the slug's help again, showing him an image of the planets tearing each other apart, and an approximation of how far out I'd like them to move Detritus.
Go,
Fine said. Go, I agreed. And in a blink, we passed beneath the distracted eyes and stared out at Evershore, which was much smaller than it had been. Beside me, Rig swore.
Kauri, I said. Is that far enough?
They're watching the tidal levels, Kauri said. They say they would like advance notice before your planet decides to visit again.
Tell them we'll call first next time, I said. And let me know if we need to move again. We can keep trying until we get it right.
Jorgen, Alanique said, we could use some help down here.
I expanded my senses outward, taking in the whole of the battlefield. Our people were fighting, but they were scared. The appearance of Detritus and the scattering platforms both encouraged and confused them. Arturo was doing a good job with our people, but a lot of the Urdale and Kitson couldn't understand him, and they lacked our organization and discipline. They were struggling. I felt the Kitson Cytonics wielding mind blades, hyperjumping their ships into better positions. I felt their joy at being reunited with their kinsmen, and their terror that this day could be the last for their home. Down on the planet, I could feel the Kitson civilians huddling, frightened,
and one mind listening carefully, with rapt attention and a fair amount of confusion. Was that Cobb? I asked.
Son, he said, I don't know what you've done up there, but for the North Star's sake, don't stop now.
I closed my eyes. There were people all around, fighting and dying because of me. I'd worked so hard to find Cobb, but now I realized I was afraid to find him, afraid of what he'd think of what we'd done. All this, all the resources we'd expended, moving the scudding planet, that was on me.
You what? Cobb said.
Oh, he could hear me, scud.
Sir, we—
Never mind, Cobb said. Focus. You've got a battle to win.
I felt like I should stop and give a full report, find out what my commander's orders were. But I was pretty sure he'd given me an order, so... Over by the control panel, Rig was fiddling with the radio, finding the flight's channel. We knew he'd found it when Arturo swore loudly.
Is that detritus up there?
Yes, it is, Rig said. If we couldn't bring you home, we thought we'd bring home to you.
Saints and stars, Sadie said. I waited for Ned's wisecrack, but it didn't come, and my heart dropped. Amphi, I said, why don't I hear Nedder?
Because he's speechless for once, Sadie said. Like the saint says, Kimmelin said, if you don't have anything to say, you might scare your flight leader into thinking you're dead.
I'm here, Ned said. Just, wow.
Orders, jerkface, Arturo said. The enemy ships are scattering away from the platforms, I said. The platforms were taking care of the area far above Dreamspring now, but even with their mobility, they weren't versatile enough to do all the work. All flights, intercept those fighters and chase as many as you can in the direction of the platforms. We have the advantage now. Let's use it. Arturo started giving orders, but I could already see what the problem was going to be. We had three different species of pilots in the air, and only some of them had translators in their ships. Defending a city was a more contained effort. Trying to catch and herd the enemy ships was going to take an enormous coordinated effort. We needed precision, but we had different training, and some of the Kitson ships probably had no training at all in working with a group this large. Communicating with them all was going to be impossible. Unless... Scud, I had an idea. I reached for Fine's box and opened it, pulling him out into my arms. Thank you for your help, I said. Mind lending me some more?
Fine, Snuggles said. Fine, Fine said.
Fine, I said. And I focused on the battle again, on the many minds now scattering out over the planet. I felt Fine following me, his mind scanning over all the fighter pilots, a few of them winking out of existence, others blind with terror about what would become of them. Some determined, fighting, focused mostly on staying alive. I could see the shape of the battle. I could see the patterns in the chaos, the places where we needed to push forward and those where we needed to pull back to manipulate the enemy, to stop their destruction and get them where we wanted them. Ready? I said to Fine.
Ready,
Fine said. And I pushed outward toward their minds, sending them all the vision, helping them see what I could see. Not a mass of individual fighters, but a military so brave and strong and powerful that even the almighty superiority was afraid of it. This was it, I realized. The thing the superiority feared the most. The power of all of us working together. I could feel other comm slugs joining us, amplifying the signal to my allies below. I could sense their minds responding. I couldn't pick out individual voices, only this feeling. We were in this together, and in that, we had hope. I focused on the different fronts, directing our flights, pushing this one here, that one there, pulling back some of our forces, and urging others to retreat to the city, to cover the hospital area and the homes of the civilians. They all understood me because in our minds there were no languages, no barriers. Around me, Riggs' team continued to direct the platforms into place. Piece by piece, the platforms were extending their shield across Evershore, trapping the enemy inside where my fighters hunted them mercilessly, driving them up into the fire of the platforms. So many pieces, but I could see the larger pattern, and I did my best to express it. Our fighters began to fly better, more precisely, taking more and more control of the skies. And then I heard a whisper from the nowhere. One word, the sweetest of all. Retreat. The superiority ships began to race for the edges of the shield, the fighters pouring into their remaining carrier ships, which blinked out of existence. Some of the fighters turned and ran without a ship to go back to, flying with blind terror, and my people picked them off one by one. In my mind, one feeling resonated above all others. Relief. They were leaving. We'd won. It was only one battle, one rain cloud from the oncoming storm, but we were going to hold out. We were going to keep fighting. From now on, we'd do it together. Chapter 21. When the battle was over, I hyperjumped with Juno down to the cliff above Dreamspring. The tidal wave had hit the lower city while I'd been gone, and there was considerable flooding, though the upper city remained intact and the water hadn't reached the cliffs by the library. A few of the buildings had taken damage from falling ships or destructor fire, and bits of wreckage were scattered over the fins and ridges of the city. "I'm sorry this happened," I said to Juno.
"So am I," Juno said. "But my people leave today richer, despite the setbacks."
"You have your cytonics back," I said.
"It is more than that," Juno said. "We are no longer isolated."
There was still so much to figure out, so much work to do. The ever-present political squabbling would continue on. But Juno was right. We weren't alone anymore. We were still fighting for our lives, but at least now we could fight side by side. I squinted up at Detritus, which hung in the sky like a second moon, a bright sphere of metal and glinting shield. Stars. I didn't know how long we should leave it here, but I was going to let Cobb make that call, and all the calls from here on out, just as soon as I explained everything to him. A transport ship hyperjumped into the middle of the road below the cliff face, probably carried by one of the Tanics from Platform Prime. I squinted, watching as the ship's cabin lights illuminated a man in a Vice Admiral's uniform. Stoff climbed out of the ship and moved toward the library. The medtechs were just pulling Cobb and Grangran down the stairs, still on their stretchers. They left Cobb at the top and carried Grangran, who protested loudly all the way down to the transport ship. "I have to go talk to my superiors," I said to Juno. "It's better if you don't come with me this time."
"That's all right, Shadow Walker," Juno said, lifting his book. "I have a great many things to record."
"Snuggles," I said, and I urged her to hyperjump us to the roadway beside the ship. When we arrived, I could hear Grangran yelling at the medtechs.
"I can walk," she said. "I may be old and blind, but I'm not infirm."
I stepped aside as the medtechs persisted in carrying her to the transport ship. "It's okay, Grangran," I said. "No one thinks you're incapable."
"They'd better not," Grangran said, "or I'll show them."
I was sure she would. Stoff had already made it to Cobb's side. FM came up next to me. I saw her ship parked up the road now by Sadie's.
"Sir," Stoff said, "we are so thrilled you're back. We've made some great strides in securing alliances with the Erdale and the Kitson."
"That's good," Cobb said.
He looked over to me like he was waiting for me to say something. His face was still bruised, his left eye partially swollen shut.
"It's true, sir," I said. "We have made progress."
I knew Stoff was going to take credit for everything now that it had panned out, and I didn't want to start a war with him. I was too tired from the one we'd just fought. We'd saved lives and made alliances. That was what mattered, not the petty politics of who ordered what. I glanced at FM, thinking she'd be glad I wasn't picking this battle.
Stoff had nothing to do with it, she said.
Excuse me, Stoff said.
Cobb looked over at her.
Permission to speak freely, sir? She asked.
I think you've already started doing that, Cobb said, his voice hoarse. So go on.
Stoff had nothing to do with the alliance with the Kitson, FM said. He refused to make the call to send the flights to help them. He dumped all the responsibility onto Jorgen, so that if it was the wrong choice, Jorgen would take the fall for it.
Stoff's mouth fell open.
Is that true, son? Cobb asked.
Yes, I said. Though in Stoff's defense, I did come in swinging. FM gave me a sharp look, like she didn't understand why I was speaking in Stoff's defense, but it was the truth. I told him we were already authorized by you to make alliances, I continued, and we weren't going to hear anything more from the Assembly about talking to the Superiority. I was pretty sure I'd implied we weren't going to hear anything more from the Assembly ever, but that was obviously not a long-term solution.
Before we knew of your whereabouts, Stoff said, we felt it was best to follow your last orders. Who is we? Cobb asked. Last I checked, in the absence of the Admiral, the Vice Admiral's job isn't done by committee.
Stoff stammered. If he hadn't listened to me, I said, we might never have found you and Mrs. Nightshade. I don't know how long your bodies would have lasted with your spirits in the portal, but I can't imagine it would have been long. Cobb gave me a look that said I wasn't helping myself, but it was true. Stoff was a coward, but he'd stayed out of my way when it mattered.
The point is, FM said, Jorgen is the one who found Kauri's transmission, which led us to you on Evershore. He made the call to travel here to find you, and to try to follow your last orders to us and make alliances for Detritus. And when everything went wrong, Jorgen is the one who made the call to pull in more flights, to put Rig and his team on moving the platforms, and to ultimately make the discovery together with them that we could move the planet.
Cobb looked at me. I couldn't deny anything she'd said. Those were the facts. That's true, sir. Though she did leave out the part where I manifested mind blades in a meeting full of alien politicians. So it wasn't all good.
Yes, well, Cobb said. You seem to have overcome that misstep, all right.
Sir, Stoff said.
I'm sure you understand that I was only trying to do what was best for the people of Detritus. Clearly, you had put your trust in Flight Leader Waite, and so I...
That's enough, Cobb said. Stoff, take a walk.
Stoff's jaw dropped again.
Sir, he said. Take a walk, Cobb repeated.
Stoff blinked at him, and then he turned around and left. It really was a good thing he listened to me, I said. If he hadn't let me make the decisions, we could have lost the whole Kitson planet.
That may be, Cobb said, but a commander who shuffles off the hard choices is no commander at all.
He looked at me like he was considering something. He bent over for a moment, coughing, and FM and I looked at each other in alarm. I had no idea what being half stuck behind that portal had done to Cobb's body, but he seemed to be weathering it poorly.
Sir, I said. FM, would you excuse us?
Cobb said when he could speak again. My heart dropped. Here it was. He was going to chew me out for taking control. The decisions I'd made were far above my pay grade. I shouldn't have done the things I did, even though they'd saved lives. Stoff would have painted me as a renegade if things had gone poorly, but that wouldn't have taken a very broad brush. FM gave me one worried look, and then she nodded and turned to leave. Cobb sat up in bed, glancing with irritation at the medical devices still strapped to his arm. I'm sorry I acted rashly, sir, I said. I can brief you on everything, get you up to speed.
I heard quite a bit over the radio there at the end, Cobb said, his voice still strained.
He looked up at me like he was struggling to focus.
And that thing you did, speaking directly to everyone's minds. That's satanic, isn't it? You haven't manifested some other ungodly power I need to know about.
No, sir, I said. It's satanic.
How long were you listening over the radio?
I told them to call in as soon as you were awake.
And I told them to keep their mouths shut and let you work, Cobb said. It was clear you had things well in hand.
That seemed like an overstatement. We may not have done everything exactly by the book, I said, but we've made progress on the Alliance, and we have a lot more knowledge of how our own technology functions. I think you're going to be really pleased about what we have to work with. There were some rough patches, sir, but we pulled through them. And now that you're back,
you've taken on an incredible amount of responsibility, Cobb continued.
I'm sorry, sir, I said. I was doing the best I could with the resources I had, and I think my judgment was a little impaired by what happened to my parents.
I'm sorry about what happened to them, Cobb said. The med team filled me in. They were lost in the explosion.
Yes, I said. Cobb shook his head.
We disagreed, but they didn't deserve for it to end like that.
My eyes started to burn, but I blinked it away.
None of that changes the incredible work you've done here, Cobb said. If this is what you do when your judgment is impaired, I'd like to see what you do when you're thinking clearly.
I was simply trying to do what I thought you would do if you were here, I said. Cobb gave me a look and I stuttered. I may not have predicted that perfectly, I added.
In this case, that only seems like a good thing.
He looked up at the clouds and shook his head again.
You have things so well in hand that I'm going to promote you to Vice Admiral.
Stars. Vice Admiral. That was skipping a lot of ranks. Though I did like the idea of getting to advise Cobb directly, what with everything we'd done and learned since he was replaced by that superiority plant. Thank you, sir, I said.
As soon as that's taken care of, Cobb said, coughing again. I think it's clear that I'm in no condition to lead, especially when we're now hopping our entire planet around the galaxy.
He eased himself back on his stretcher, staring up at the sky.
So I'm going to need to relieve myself from duty until such a time that I'm fit for command.
I blinked at him, trying to make those words mean something other than what I thought they meant. Which of the vice admirals do you intend to give operational command to, sir?
I know subtlety isn't your strong point, Cobb said. But if you can figure out how to move an entire planet, I think you can answer that question yourself.
Saints and stars, you can't be serious. You have so much more experience.
With all of this?
He waved his arm, taking in the Kitson City. The ships above us, detritus shining in the sky like it had always been there. He winced, holding his side, and then let his arm fall again.
No, Admiral. I would say you and your flight are the only ones with any experience dealing with all of this. Both our military and a coalition of alien races are ready to follow you into battle. Against a foe so powerful, they probably shouldn't have any hope of survival, much less victory. But they do. They're chattering about it over the radio, all of us resisting together.
I didn't mean to take control, I said. I was only trying to hold out until you returned. I never wanted... One corner of Cobb's mouth turned up.
No, he said. The good ones never do.
I stared at him. You're serious.
I am.
I don't intend to abandon you. There's a whole lot of paperwork surrounding the position, and it'll be good for you to have someone to help keep that out of your way. But clearly, you're best suited to be in strategic command. The Saint knows you're better suited to it than I am.
Cobb raised an eyebrow at me, and his mustache twitched.
Unless you mean to turn down the promotion.
He watched me carefully, waiting for my answer. I looked up at the sky, at the gleaming moon of Evershore and detritus hanging up there with it. I'd brought us this far on the hope that Cobb would relieve me of the responsibility to pull us through this, if not unscathed, then at least alive. I thought there was an end, a point at which I could unload everything that rested on my shoulders. If I said yes, that might never end. But if I refused, I'd only be shuffling it off to someone else. There was no one besides Cobb that I'd trust to lead us as we faced what was coming. I'd pushed us this far so we could have the benefit of his judgment again. And if this was what he thought was best, then so be it. No, sir, I said. I'll accept it.
Good.
Cobb put a hand on my arm.
I wish your parents could see what you've accomplished. They would be so proud of you.
Something inside me cracked. In my time in the Defiant Defense Force, I'd felt lost and inadequate. I'd felt undermined and humiliated in front of both my flight mates and my superiors. I'd made calls no human being should ever have to make, had been both right and wrong about them, and had to live with both. I'd stayed in control through it all, because that was what I had been raised to do. But at that moment, the veneer of my composure shattered like a damaged canopy. In front of my superior officer, Scud, was he still my superior? I started to cry.
You're going to be all right, son, Cobb said, squeezing my arm. If you need my help, you can now contact me no matter where I am. Which is a little disturbing, by the way. If you're going to make a habit of it, find some way to give me warning. It's going to take some getting used to.
I'll try, sir, I said. Cobb shook his head at me.
You can do what you want with Stoff, he said. It's your decision.
I don't think he should be in command anymore, I said, but I don't want to punish him either. He really could have made things a lot more difficult and gotten a lot more people killed.
That seems like a good decision, Cobb said. Not your first.
Thank you, sir.
Now, if you don't mind, Cobb said, I'm going to close my eyes for a minute.
Of course, sir, I said.
And Jorgen?
Yes, sir. Cobb sighed.
You're going to have to stop calling me. Sir.
Epilogue. I left Cobb with the medtechs and stumbled up the road toward the city. I found Kuna standing outside the Senate building. It appeared to be filled with Kitson, all packed in together. Goro hovered by Kuna's shoulder, still in his ceremonial armor. How did the evacuation go? I asked.
Very well, Kuna said. We opened the buildings in the upper city so that the Kitson in the lower areas had somewhere to take shelter. I believe most of them made it out.
Thank you for your help, I said.
I'm glad I could be of service, Kuna said, and that we could save the people here.
They looked back into the Senate chamber, packed with so many Kitson I could hardly tell one from another. Kuna cared about these people, I realized. They spoke like they thought themselves superior, but they were trying to save lives. I could work with that. I'm sorry about the flooding, I said to Goro. Goro looked out at the city somberly, and I expected him to announce that we were enemies once again for all the destruction we'd brought in our wake.
Tell me, human, he said, now that you have fought on our shores and won, do you consider us your conquest?
No, I said, but I'm hoping we can call you our allies. Goro narrowed his eyes at me.
Kuna says you've brought back our Shadow Walkers, who we thought lost forever. You command the tides themselves, moving celestial bodies in the firmament. But you don't mean to rule us.
If I commanded the tides, I said, pointing toward the lower city, I wouldn't have told them to do that. We humans have enough trouble ruling over ourselves. We only want an alliance, I swear to you. No one is going to invade. Goro snorted.
Fair enough, human. It's not my decision, but I will speak for you if you need my support.
Thank you, I said, though at this moment, what I needed most was to get away. I excused myself and strode down the road, past the crowds of Kitsun who were leaving the buildings of the upper city to survey the damage. I found FM at the end of the road, where the water now flooded the lower levels of the city. Ships hovered over it, pilots lifting their canopies, looking up at the platforms surrounding the planet. Some of the platforms disappeared and reappeared again in different positions. Rig was obviously still working out their optimal spacing for generating the shield. Stars, the things we'd accomplished. And yet there was still so much work to do. We had to seize on this, the way we'd worked together, the potential we had as a group. Someone was going to have to keep that momentum going. And Scud, that was me. Do better than we did. I was excited to get started.
How did it go? FM asked.
Cobb made me vice admiral, I said. And then he stepped down and put me officially in charge. Her mouth fell open.
What?
You heard me.
Jorgen, she said. That's wonderful.
Is it?
Yes! I mean, she shook her head. You'll be so great at it.
FM knew my weaknesses as a leader as well as anyone, so her confidence meant something.
Scud, she said. That means you won't be our flight leader anymore.
She sounded sad, which was also significant. Yeah, I said, that's right. I looked up at the sky. The clouds had thinned, and stars peeked through the blackness, so clear it felt like we were out in space. You could take over the flight, you know, I said. You'd be good at it.
I don't want it, FM said. I've never wanted to be in charge.
I know, I said. I think I'm going to leave it to Arturo.
You should. He'll do a good job.
He will. FM would too, but I understood why she didn't want it. Besides, I needed her somewhere else. How would you feel about leaving the flight? FM looked at me. What? You were right, I said. We don't have diplomats, and we need them. The assembly is a mess, but we do need to work with them. The DDF needs a diplomatic program to work with our own scudding people, in addition to our allies. We've got to get everyone on the same page, and we can't do it by ordering them there. I'm going to need someone in charge who cares about more than the chain of command.
You care about more than that, FM said.
I do, I said. And that's why I want to put you in charge of our diplomatic program. We need your empathy. I need you to help me figure out how to handle all of this, the politics and the foreign relationships. You're so good at seeing through the rules and the orders and the scudding red tape and getting right at what needs to be done for the people involved. I know you don't want to be in command, but there's nobody better to be in charge of this. I took a deep breath. I could order her to do it. I had the authority now. But I didn't want to do that to FM. She was my friend. She'd already gone above and beyond for our people. She didn't have to take this on if she didn't want it. It's your choice, though. I understand if you want to stay with the flight. FM stared up at the sky, the stars reflecting in her eyes.
I'll do it.
Really? She nodded.
I hate the idea of the flight going out without me. I hate that I won't be there to protect them.
You'd be protecting them in a different way, I said.
I know. And that's why I'll do it. I never wanted to fight, you know. I only wanted to do what was best for the people who don't have a voice. The people the DDF ignores.
I nodded.
and I don't want to get so caught up in the military structure that I forget why we're doing this. I need your help.
FM nodded.
You're going to regret having said that when I start disagreeing with you. I laughed, probably, but that's what I need you for.
I'll be sure to remind you of that often.
I wouldn't expect anything less.
FM continued to stare at the sky with a troubled expression.
Are you sure this is what you want? I asked. If you need to think about it.
I'm sure, FM said. I feel relieved, and I hate myself for it.
I don't think you need to.
She looked sideways at me. Does that ever stop you?
No. But if it makes you feel better, flying is probably a whole lot easier than getting people to communicate with each other.
Probably, FM said. And it's not like our lives won't still be in danger. But it's not the same.
No, I said, it isn't.
I'd already made calls that put my friends in danger. I was going to have to do it again and again and again. I wasn't sure how to feel good about that. Maybe I never would. Maybe that was because I shouldn't.
I'm going to go tell Rig, FM said. I wondered if she was agreeing to leave the flight because of him, but I didn't ask. I wouldn't judge her for it if she did.
FM looked at me. If you need to talk more, we'll do that later, I said. You can go.
I did need to talk more, I realized. I couldn't do this alone, so it was a good thing I didn't have to. Right now, though, I wished I could talk to Spensa. I missed her so much I ached. I wanted to know what she thought of all this. She would believe in me. I was sure of that much. She always believed in me, even when I drove her crazy. The same way I believed in her, even though I hated how far away she was, hated that I didn't know if she'd make it home. I reached out, searching for her, and I found that presence again, Doomslug. She was worried about Spensa. I could feel it. So was I. I'd done some impossible things tonight, things I couldn't explain. I usually thought of Spensa as the one who pulled off impossible tasks, but apparently she wasn't the only one. I wasn't going to give up on her. I'd keep learning, I'd keep trying, and I'd find a way to help her if I could. But if not, I would at least make sure she had a home to come back to.
Acknowledgements. To everyone on my team at Dragonsteel Entertainment, thank you as always. Emily Sanderson, Peter Alstrom, Karen Alstrom, Isaac Stewart, Kara Stewart, Adam Horn, and everyone else. Thank you for everything you've done on Evershore and all of the Skyward Flight novellas. Once more, thank you to Isaac Stewart, our art director, and Charlie Bowater, our cover artist, for their work on the beautiful Evershore cover art. And again, thank you to Karen Alstrom, our continuity editor, and to Christina Kugler for her editorial services on the line and copy. You guys were great. A special thank you, as always, to Max and the Mainframe team for their great work on each of these audiobooks. Finally, once more, thank you to the fans of this series. I hope you have enjoyed Evershore. Brandon. I am so grateful to the fantastic teams at Dragonsteel and Mainframe for helping make this book a reality, and to the team at Jabberwocky for being such consistent supporters of me and my work. Special thanks to Peter Alstrom for helping us iron out some plot issues on a tight schedule. And thanks especially to Max Epstein for putting up with my neuroses and even occasionally finding them amusing. Thanks also to Cortana Olds, call sign Halo, for being my sounding board and for reading along as I wrote. Thanks to Megan Walker, who listened to a lot of whining about the state of various drafts and still brought me motivation cookies, and who also read an early draft. And of course, huge thanks to the Dragonsteel beta team. Darcy Cole, call sign Blue, Liliana Klein, call sign Slip, Alice Arneson, call sign Wetlander, Paige Phillips, call sign Artisan, Jennifer Neal, call sign Vibes, Spencer White, call sign Elder, Mark Lindberg, call sign Megalodon, D. Deanna Covell Whitney, call sign Braid. Joy Allen, call sign Joycefriend. Suzanne Musin, call sign Oracle. Paige Vest, call sign Blade. Jaden King, call sign Tripod. And Linnea Lindstrom, call sign Pixie. Special thanks to Jaden for his flying expertise and for being generally awesome, and to Linnea for her fan art and enthusiasm. Thanks to Christina Kugler, who I somehow forgot to mention in Sunreach and Redawn because my brain has been mush, for her truly fantastic edits on this book, and also on the first two. Christy did amazing work on these books on a very tight and demanding schedule, and I'm forever grateful to her for it. Also, Christy, I love you 50 million billion. A huge thanks is due to Darcy Cole, who listened to more whining than anybody and did a serious amount of cheerleading as I worked through the drafts of this book. Darcy, you are amazing. Thank you for your optimism and your friendship. I would have lost my mind without you. Thank you to my husband, Drew Olds, for his infinite patience with me and my work, and for always believing I can do it, even when I lose faith. Thanks most of all to Brandon, who has believed in my work longer than almost anybody. Thank you for trusting me with your characters and giving me a hand up out of my own deep plot holes. It's an honor and a privilege to tell these stories with you. Jancy. Another huge shout out to this book's Gamma Reader team. Brian T. Hill, call sign El Guapo. Chris McGrath, call sign Gunner. Kalyani Paluri, call sign Henna. Sean Van Buskirk, call sign Vanguard. Joy Allen, call sign Joyspren. Philip Vorwaller, call sign Vanadium. Sam Baskin, call sign Turtle. Evgeny Kirilov, call sign Argent. Joshua Harkey, call sign Jafu. Ian McNatt, call sign Weary. Jaden King, call sign Tripod. Jessica Ashcraft, call sign Gesh. Ted Herman, call sign Cavalry. Rob West, call sign Larkspur. Megan Kane, call sign Sparrow. Jesse Lake, call sign Lady. Dr. Kathleen Holland, call sign Shockwave. Jennifer Neal, call sign Vibes. Eric Lake, and Aaron Ford, call sign Widget. You are the eyes that see all, but not like the Delvers. Peter. Thank you to Brandon and Jancy for such an amazing third Skyward Flight novella. It was a wonderful experience working with you both on Evershore and each of the other Skyward Flight stories. A special thank you is also due to our incredible narrator, Susie Jackson, for giving her voice to these amazing characters that Brandon and Jancy have created. Thanks are also due to Joshua Bilmes, Eddie Schneider, everyone at Jabberwocky Literary Agency, Samara and the team at Brickshop Audio, as well as everyone at Listening Library, Penguin Random House Audio, and Delacorte Press. And, as always, thank you to everyone at Mainframe involved in this project, especially Juliana Fernandez, Julian Mann, Will Newell, and Craig Shields. Max. We hope you have enjoyed this Mainframe audio production of Evershore by Brandon Sanderson and Jancy Patterson, narrated by Susie Jackson. Copyright 2021 by Mainframe LLC. Performance copyright 2021 by Mainframe LLC. All rights reserved. This audiobook was recorded at Brickshop Audio, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.